Depression, the Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley. Chapter 6, Herbs and Medications. After attending a local community college her freshman year, Angela decided to leave home and attend the University of Oklahoma. She was hoping the change of scenery would do her good. The past school year had been a rough one. Angela often felt incredibly down. Things got even worse that summer. Fatigue was her daily companion. Sometimes Angela was too tired to even get out of bed. To make matters worse, this normally congenial and self-controlled young woman became prone to emotional outbursts. When confronted by her parents, Angela honestly confided that she didn't know why little things were suddenly getting on her nerves. As the summer progressed, it seemed like only Angela's dreams of attending OU kept her going. Her hopes were focused on enrolling in that large university, meeting new friends with similar interests, and obtaining the necessary training to begin a health science career. The success of her educational plan depended on getting excellent grades. Within a week of arriving at OU, Angela fell into a routine of calling home virtually every night. Away from home for the first time in her life, it was easy for her parents to attribute the nightly calls to homesickness. However, there was much more going on than a mere change in physical surroundings. Angela's roommate regularly stayed up until after midnight and slept in late. Angela didn't have the luxury of leisurely mornings. In order to make a 7 a.m. class, her alarm rang at 6. Unfortunately, the habits of Angela's roommate typically kept them both awake until the early hours of the morning. Even after the lights were out, however, Angela often found it difficult to fall asleep. Those first months at OU were very difficult. Angela wasn't her normal productive self. She couldn't accomplish as much during her study hours as she had previously. Exhaustion often overwhelmed her. She knew she was not getting the sleep she needed, yet felt powerless to change her situation. As fall break neared, Angela looked forward to returning home. She longed to again be in that supportive environment with loving family members. Angela dreamed of lying in her own bed and catching up on some much-needed sleep. Consequently, when classes finally dismissed, Angela lost no time in driving home. After about 3 hours on the road, it was indeed wonderful to be back with her family. Sitting around the table that evening, the reunited family of six had a great time. Everyone caught up on the latest news. There were animated conversations and an abundance of hearty laughter. The evening passed quickly, for Angela was determined to follow through on her commitment to get to bed early. She left the rest of the family around 9 p.m. A short while later, her mother stopped by Angela's room to say goodnight, but she was not greeted by her seemingly cheerful daughter of earlier that evening. Instead, Mother found Angela bitterly crying. Had someone in the family offended her? No. It was then that Angela shared a secret she'd never expressed during the nightly phone calls from OU. This was not a new problem. Every night at school, she had cried herself to sleep. The concerns of Angela's parents continued to escalate during the first few days of her week at home. They decided things had gone far enough when they noticed that simple decisions like choosing an outfit for church or deciding what to eat for breakfast would turn their daughter into an emotional basket case. Her parents wisely insisted that Angela get medical help before fall break was over. At first she refused, but when constrained to admit her emotional state was jeopardizing her academic success, Angela acquiesced. A combination of fortuitous circumstances and personal contacts resulted in an after-hours appointment for Angela the following day. The doctor didn't waste any time in diagnosing major depression and prescribing an appropriate treatment program. Angela wanted to get back to OU when school started in a few days. Furthermore, she pressed her new physician for assurance that things would be better by the time she arrived back on campus. However, what could be reasonably accomplished in such a short time? Surely her few remaining vacation days didn't afford sufficient time for such a difficult problem to significantly improve. Despite what you may have heard or even experienced yourself, in just a few days, Angela had dramatically improved. By the time she returned to school, the crying spells were behind her. She was sleeping better, her energy level was beginning to rebound, and most importantly in her eyes, she was concentrating better and studying more efficiently. This isn't a fabricated case history or an embellished story I heard third or fourth hand. You see, I was the doctor that diagnosed and treated Angela. Was her rapid response due to my great prowess as a physician? Far from it. Angela's success was the direct result of an integrated treatment regimen that included natural supplements, nutritional changes, other lifestyle measures, and medication. Although no two people respond identically to any given agent, I can confidently say that an integrated program for depression typically delivers quicker, more lasting effects than a program that relies on a single modality. Philosophy on herbs and medications. In many cases of depression, medication may initially be necessary for successful treatment or prevention of complications. However, I found that certain herb supplements and other botanical agents often seem to hasten improvement. Whether pharmaceuticals or herbal, if such agents are necessary, I typically advise using them for less than 6 months. I almost always recommend specific nutritional and lifestyle therapies calculated to free my patients from dependence on all pills within a 6 month time frame. Supplements and medications are expensive and carry potential side effects. I treat the root cause of depression in an attempt to ensure lasting drug-free results. Natural agents for depression. Not long ago, the mention of herbal remedies might have conjured up memories of grandma mixing up a special potion for the flu or concocting a smelly ointment to soothe a stubborn rash. Not as warmly nostalgic are images of primitive witch doctors dancing around a magic potion brewed from jungle leaves and roots. Even today, some people view herbal medicine as belonging strictly to the realm of New Age gurus. During the past half century, modern pharmaceuticals nearly obliterated all memory of herbs as efficacious remedies, but the last decade has seen tremendous resurgence in their popularity. The rise in natural product usage began in the 70s and 80s. However, use of these products rose a whopping 384% between 1990 and 1997. In the treatment of depression, many herbs have been reported to lift the spirits. None require a prescription. Some of these herbs are 5-HTP, blue verivan, borage, chamomile, evening primrose oil, feverfew, ginkgo biloba, lavender, lemon balm, oat straw, saffron, St. John's wort, SAM-E, and valerian. Some of the natural agents may help relieve depression and related conditions like anxiety, insomnia, or memory impairment. Unfortunately, however, herbal claims are often based on anecdotal reports rather than scientific evidence. There is a well-recognized need for additional research on these therapies. Fortunately, the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, academic institutions, and even private industries are devoting more of their energies to this field of study. Saffron, an herb to combat depression. Saffron is known as one of the most, if not the most, expensive spice sold. It takes 50,000 flowers, enough flowers to fill a football field, to produce a single pound of spice. The spice comes from pretty red bow-like stamens in the middle of each flower. Even smelling saffron has been shown to help mood. In the hopes of saving money, a trial was done using a less expensive portion of the saffron flower, the petal, comparing it to a standard antidepressant drug, fluoxetine or Prozac. In a randomized controlled trial, 30 milligrams of the chopped-up saffron petal was compared to 20 milligrams of Prozac. Since saffron is thought to work better twice daily, Prozac was also divided up into a twice-daily dosage. Within 1 week, saffron began to improve the depressed symptoms, and by 8 weeks, both the saffron and Prozac patients were significantly improved. In both groups, 25% were in remission from their depression in 8 weeks. However, the side effect profiles were quite different. 20% of the Prozac patients experienced untoward sexual side effects, but no patients experienced any sexual side effects while taking saffron. Saffron, even smelling it, has been shown to improve symptoms of PMS in women, including improving mood, regularity, and even less menstrual cramps. In addition, it has also been shown to improve symptoms of Alzheimer's disease within 4 weeks of taking the supplement, with improvements getting better up to 16 weeks after starting the herb at 15 milligrams twice a day. In another subsequent study, it showed equivalency to Aricept, the leading Alzheimer drug, without the side effect of Aricept. Lavender oil for anxiety. Lavender oil inhalation helps anxiety in a number of ways. It decreases heart rate, blood pressure, and skin temperature while helping with relaxation and alleviating anxiety. In addition, the person feels more refreshed and alert and even does better on math tests and the speed of taking the math test. Recently, an oral lavender oil preparation called Celexin, or Lavella, was compared first with placebo and then with lorazepam, also known as Ativan, in patients with anxiety. 76% of patients with generalized anxiety disorder experienced improvement with oral lavender oil 80 milligrams a day, over double the improvement seen with placebo. Although the lavender oil preparation improved sleep quality, probably by improving the anxiety, no sedation occurred while taking the Celexin. A 6-week trial comparing oral lavender oil, Celexin, with lorazepam, Ativan, showed similar improvements in anxiety and sleep, but without sedation and without dependency developing with Celexin. This is great news, since the benzodiazepines cause frontal lobe suppression and a diminished ability to make GABA, the calming neurotransmitter, which results in people becoming highly dependent on their drugs. The study's authors state, "Since lavender oil showed no sedative effects in our study and has no potential for drug abuse, Celexin appears to be an effective and well-tolerated alternative to benzodiazepines for amelioration of generalized anxiety." St. John's wort, another herb for combating depression. Scientifically named Hypericum perforatum, St. John's wort is a common medicinal herb indigenous to much of the U.S. Wort is the Old English word for plant, and flowers from the Hypericum herb are traditionally gathered for an annual summertime feast commemorating John the Baptist's birth, hence its unusual name. For centuries, it has been used to treat various psychiatric conditions. Hypericum appears to be effective in treating mild to moderate depression, with studies showing 23 to 55% better responses than placebo therapy. When compared to standard antidepressants like Tofranil and Prozac, St. John's wort typically provides similar benefits in mild to moderate depression, although the prescription medications often show evidence of slightly greater efficacy. When it comes to severe depression, recent studies raise concerns that St. John's wort is not reliably effective. Among the greatest concerns with St. John's wort is its tendency to interact with a variety of prescription medications. Since it is often self-administered without medical consultation, it's especially important for all users and potential users of Hypericum to be aware of these potential drug interactions. Drugs whose effectiveness is diminished when used in conjunction with St. John's wort include oral contraceptives, cyclosporins, used to keep the body from rejecting transplanted organs, simvastatin or Zocor, a widely prescribed cholesterol-lowering drug, digoxin or Lanoxin, used for heart conditions, Allegra, a popular anti-allergy medication, theophylline, prescribed for asthma, Elavil, an antidepressant with a wide variety of other uses, and Coumadin, an anti-clotting drug used to prevent strokes and heart attacks. Potentially devastating drug interactions may occur when St. John's wort is used with other antidepressant medications. Among the most feared complications is the serotonin syndrome, a condition apparently resulting from excessive serotonin levels that overstimulate the nervous system. Severe physical and mental symptoms associated with this disorder include shivering, muscle spasms, confusion, agitation, sweating, fever, rapid heartbeat, heart rhythm problems, kidney failure, seizures, and even coma. The recommended dosage of St. John's wort is 300 milligrams of a 0.3% Hypericin standardized preparation 3 times a day, for a total of 900 milligrams daily. SAME, SAMI, another herb for combating depression. Although S-adenosylmethionine, SAME, or SAMI, has not attracted as large a following as St. John's wort, it takes first place on my list of natural depression-fighting supplements. SAMI supplementation both increases neurotransmitter levels, norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin, and improves brain cell membrane fluidity. These result in significant mood and outlook improvements. Although only available as an over-the-counter agent in the U.S. since the late 1990s, SAMI has been used extensively in Europe for some 30 years. It has amassed an impressive list of medical credentials. For example, researchers Della Chai and colleagues coordinated 2 multi-center evaluations of SAMI involving nearly 600 patients from over 70 hospital and university centers throughout Italy. Their careful double-blinded studies pitted SAMI against a proven tricyclic antidepressant, imipramine, used at its full standard European dosage of 150 milligrams daily. Oral SAMI, 800 milligrams twice daily, proved equally effective as the drug regimen. Over 60% of the depressed patients in each group improved at least moderately over the course of 6 weeks. However, SAMI emerged as superior in the side effect category. Only 5% of users experienced treatment-related problems compared to 20% with imipramine. Other research confirms SAMI's favorable side effect profile. When problems do occur, they are usually tolerable. These include mild insomnia, lack of appetite, diarrhea or constipation, excessive gas, nausea, dry mouth, sweating, dizziness, and nervousness. Symptoms can often be minimized by starting at a lower dosage, such as 200 milligrams twice daily, and gradually increasing to 800 milligrams twice daily if necessary. In my experience, it often takes only 400 milligrams a day to get good results. A number of my patients, by using SAMI at this dosage, have experienced dramatic improvement in their depression. Another noteworthy SAMI benefit is its rapidity of action. Some patients appear to improve within a few days of starting the supplement, and most do so within 2 weeks. Compare this to conventional prescription antidepressants that often take 4 to 6 weeks before registering significant benefits. Compare this to conventional prescription antidepressants that often take 4 to 6 weeks before registering significant benefits. For this reason, some practitioners start SAMI at the same time as a prescription drug in an attempt to achieve a quicker response. Earlier SAMI studies were plagued by problems with a supplement's chemical stability. This has been addressed by the development of a chemically stable form known as SAMI-1,4-butanedisulfonate. Potency of this compound is maintained throughout its 2-year shelf life. Furthermore, the butane disulfonate formulation has a track record of safety and efficacy. It was the agent used in the compelling Italian multicenter research. In summary, I find SAMI to be an excellent, well-tolerated agent. However, a few caveats are in order. First, SAMI is not advised for those with a history of mania or bipolar disorder, as it can trigger mania and agitation in such individuals. Second, S-adenosylmethionine, or SAMI, is fairly expensive. Expect to pay about $50 a month if you're taking 400 milligrams a day. Finally, with prescription drugs, unless underlying depression causes are identified and addressed, SAMI users who discontinue the supplement will often experience a sudden relapse of their depression. 5-HTP increases serotonin levels. 5-hydroxytryptophan, 5-HTP, has long been employed as an alternative antidepressant. Its use is based on sound physiology. Our brains use L-tryptophan to make 5-HTP, which can then be converted into the mood-elevating neurotransmitter serotonin. Furthermore, 5-HTP appears to be superior to tryptophan as a serotonin-raising agent. It passes much more readily from the bloodstream to the brain and is more efficiently converted into serotonin. As compelling as this rationale sounds, it's harder to come up with definitive evidence of HTP's benefits from actual patient studies. Indeed, Australian researchers Shaw and colleagues tried to do exactly this. They used a computerized database search to uncover any study ever published where either 5-HTP or tryptophan was used to treat depression. After locating 108 papers, they were disappointed to find only 2 met the highest standard of quality research. Although both these studies suggested 5-HTP and tryptophan provided benefit, the limited evidence left serious questions about how effective these agents really were. Similar frustrations were expressed in a recent overview of 5-HTP by Simon and Young, Ph.D. of Canada's McGill University. These other experts agree there is rationale in some scientific data suggesting 5-HTP helps depression, however, the evidence is not yet conclusive. 5-HTP is generally well tolerated. Side effects are usually mild, including intestinal upset, nausea, heartburn, excessive gas, diarrhea, and loss of appetite. However, the greatest concerns stem from its close chemical resemblance to L-tryptophan, a compound linked to the chronic debilitating eosinophilia myalgia syndrome, EMS, presumably because of impurities introduced at a single Japanese supplement manufacturing lab. These concerns have been buttressed by scientific reports suggesting that some 5-HTP preparations may contain contaminants posing EMS-like risks. That is why I recommend avoiding any chemically synthesized 5-HTP. However, historically, 5-HTP was not manufactured in labs. Instead, it was extracted from an African plant named Griffonia simplicifolia. Many reputable supplement manufacturers still obtain their 5-HTP from this source. I recently reviewed documentation from a major German supplier, Kaden Biochemicals, that extracts their 5-HTP from Grifonia, as well as a report from an independent U.S. lab which tested Kaden's products. Those materials presented a strong case that 5-HTP obtained from natural plant sources is unlikely to have significant toxic implications. Nonetheless, as far as the current state of evidence, I'm more impressed with SAMe than 5-HTP when it comes to efficacy and safety. Non-medications by prescription only. The pharmaceutical industry realizes that medications have their limitations and that non-medical approaches may sometimes be superior to medication. For instance, omega-3 supplements may be superior to taking medication. However, if the company tries to patent omega-3, the government patent office will send back a short letter refusing the patent due to omega-3 being prior art. In other words, omega-3 has been in nature for ages and thus cannot be patented. This produces somewhat of a quandary in regard to natural supplements. The Food and Drug Administration often requires multiple prospective randomized placebo-controlled human clinical trials before it will approve a patented medication to be released to the market. These studies cost literally millions of dollars. If a practitioner recommends a natural product for a condition, other practitioners often say, "But the studies performed on this natural product are not as rigorous as the medication studies, and thus we cannot be as certain regarding efficacy or side effects of the natural product. This is why we only prescribe medicines where rigorous studies have been performed." This sounds logical and wise, but it ignores some important facts. Why aren't similar studies performed by these companies in regard to promising natural products? The studies could be done, but no company will invest this kind of money to prove that a natural product will greatly help a condition with minimal side effects if they cannot patent the product. Almost anyone can put omega-3 or folate or vitamin B12 in a capsule. Thus, the company investing in the study would have to mediate often cheaper competition right after the study was published, and there would be no way to recuperate the money put into the studies. Occasionally, good studies are done on natural products, but this money does not come from industry, but from humanitarian organizations or government organizations such as the National Institute of Health. In this book, we have compiled and quoted from many of these studies. Although each study quoted in this book is noteworthy and helpful, most are not FDA gold standard. Unfortunately, while reduced standards make such studies possible by saving the funding organization millions of dollars, they also provide fuel for drug companies who claim that your natural product study is not as rigorous as my drug study. It also ignores the evidence that many natural products are far safer and even more efficacious than drugs. Two companies, recognizing the value of natural products in the treatment of depression, found a novel approach to get a patent and make their supplements available by prescription only. One is the maker of Deplin, or L-methylfolate. As I've documented in Chapter 3 and 4 of this book, folate can help prevent and even treat depression that medications can't even treat. It can do this by increasing the production and use of serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine in the brain. The body converts dietary folate, or folic acid, available in health food stores as a supplement, to methylfolate, which is the biologically active ingredient in both the brain and the body. Since methylfolate is not in food or other supplements, even though it is naturally found in a healthy body, the company was able to get a patent for methylfolate. Since then, methylfolate has been shown to improve both clinical and social recovery in patients with major depression and/or schizophrenia. The longer the methylfolate supplement was used, the greater the benefit. It also helps elderly depressed patients recover with no side effects. Methylfolate also helps people with depression and memory loss, particularly improving recent memory. In addition, it improves the efficacy of SSRI medications and lithium when used in addition with the medication. As I reported in Chapter 3, it also improves depression in people who haven't experienced any improvement with standard antidepressant medications. Interestingly, many of these improvements occurred in people who were not folate deficient at the beginning of the study. It is thought that the normal blood levels for folate need to be changed to a minimum of 13 nanograms per milliliter instead of the usual 5 nanograms per milliliter. It is also thought that some people with normal blood folate levels may not be able to adequately convert their folate to methylfolate due to an otherwise poor diet or lifestyle or genetic defect and could thus benefit from methylfolate supplementation. The second patent occurred in an omega-3 product called Loveza, which has two omega-3 fatty acids, eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, and docosahexaenoic acid, DHA, both present in sea plants and fish. Both molecules have been shown to improve brain performance and help depressed patients recover. Alpha-linolenic acid, ALA, another omega-3 fatty acid primarily present in plants, can be converted in the body to EPA and DHA, in addition to its primary brain benefits. Vegetarians who consume little or no DHA or EPA usually have adequate levels of EPA and DHA due to their higher conversion rates from ALA than non-vegetarians. The makers of Loveza got their patent not from the fish oil, but from the patented process used to purify and refine the fat obtained from the fish and put into capsules. The process gets rid of, as much as is possible, cholesterol, oxidized fatty acids, protein, saturated fat, other shorter fatty acids, and environmental toxins such as mercury. Although this process, or any other process for that matter, does not guarantee complete removal of these problem molecules, it does greatly reduce them. The crude fish oil that contains less than 10% quantity of omega-3, by the end of the process, is 90% omega-3, with each capsule containing 465 milligrams of EPA, 375 milligrams of DHA, and 80 milligrams of ALA. Loveza, 2,000 milligrams twice daily, is marketed for the lowering of triglycerides in people with very high triglyceride levels. The company is now investing in expensive studies to demonstrate improvements in mental health and depression. It is almost certain that very positive results will be forthcoming. I've used Loveza with success in depressed individuals, or those with memory loss who are not vegetarians, or in those who have evidence of low EPA or DHA. I still like plant sources of ALA, since the problem molecules that the patented process attempts to remove are far less in plant sources of ALA. However, in those who are not converting their ALA to EPA or DHA, Loveza is probably the safest alternative. Other natural supplements. We mentioned other natural supplements that may play a role in addressing depression or related conditions. The quality of evidence supporting those different agents varies widely. So far, I've tried to highlight natural herbs and supplements that have a stronger scientific basis for their use. As contrasting examples, there is no current clinical evidence supporting some traditional depression remedies such as lemon balm and vervain. This doesn't mean that these agents may not later be proven valuable. It simply indicates that, currently, we lack sufficient high-quality data to make a conclusive scientific decision about their use. However, two other agents are worth further attention, ginkgo and kava kava. Although convincing scientific evidence of ginkgo's antidepressant role is still lacking, I personally am encouraged by the currently available data. Furthermore, I've noticed my depressed patients who have trouble concentrating or experience difficulties making routine decisions seem to improve with this remedy. Ginkgo is generally well tolerated, with only mild, reversible side effects like intestinal upset, headaches, dizziness, palpitations, constipation, and rash. However, there are rare documented cases of serious bleeding, including into and around the brain. Because ginkgo interferes with normal platelet function, avoid this herb or use it only under careful medical supervision if you're taking Coumadin, aspirin, or other anti-inflammatory drugs. Drug interactions may also occur with thiazide diuretics, a class of water pill often used for high blood pressure, migraine medications, and certain antidepressants such as Dezerel and MAO inhibitors. As mentioned previously, standard dosing for ginkgo is 40 to 80 milligrams three times daily, using a preparation standardized to 24% flavonoglycosides for maximum daily dosage of 240 milligrams. Some individuals develop what is called an agitated depression, where both significant depression and anxiety coexist. In this context, many natural practitioners advocate Piper mysticetum, commonly referred to as kava kava. This herb has been used for centuries, playing a role in South Pacific social and ceremonial rituals. More recently, in 1990, it won approval in Germany as a non-prescription medication for anxiety. In 2002, noted natural remedy evaluator Dr. Ezard Ernest, Ph.D., reviewed the medical literature on this popular herb. He found evidence of kava's anxiety-relieving properties, including one study documenting comparable effectiveness to benzodiazepine drugs. Historically, in my practice, I recommended kava kava in rare cases of depression that I felt stemmed wholly from stress and anxiety. I more often use the herb in individuals with stress and anxiety without depression. I'm having second thoughts about the herb in view of new concerns about kava's toxicity. The most pressing of these issues stems from at least 29 cases of serious liver damage, including cases of cirrhosis, hepatitis, and liver failure that have been linked to kava kava. Generally, I refrain from recommending this herb for more than 4 continuous weeks. Remember, if you're considering any herb or medication as a means of alleviating mild to moderate depressive symptoms, lifestyle measures should always be your first line of action. You can encourage your body to fight depression naturally by producing its own mood enhancers through proper diet, exercise, moderate sunlight, effective stress management, and other lifestyle measures outlined in chapters 4 and 5. These agencies have virtually no risk. Beneficial side effects include improved physical health. So far in this chapter, we've looked at the rising popularity of herbs and other natural supplements, the claims made for them, and their effectiveness and safety. Now we turn our attention to prescription drugs and how they work, their benefits, and their drawbacks. You've been listening to Part 1 of Chapter 6 in the book Depression: The Way Out by Dr. Anil Netley, copyright 2014. To purchase this or other books by Dr. Netley, or to learn more about the 10-day residential program or the 8-week community programs, visit www.nedleyhealthsolutions.com.